It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium.
With us this morning is Patty Jo Farr. She's a grant manager at Summit Pacific Medical Center, and Angela Crowley, who's vice chairman of the Grays Harbor Consortium and works for BHR. So explain what each of your jobs happen to be. We'll start out with Patty Jo.
Thank you. I am the grant specialist at Summit Pacific Medical Center, and I am currently the grant manager of the Health Resources and Services Administration Rural Communities Opioid Response Implementation Grant, or also known as the HRSA RECORE Grant. And with that funding comes $1 million for us to implement activities that will address prevention, treatment, and recovery of substance use disorder and opioid use disorder within our community of Grays Harbor County.
Now, how long has this been in the planning stages to set this up?
So the consortium actually began back in 2018. Angela was a part of that. That was prior to my employment.
I actually came on board as part of the consortium in early 2019. And it was a group of folks that had a variety of experiences, a lot of service providers, some members of the community that had an interest and energy and a passion for taking a look at opioid use disorder in our community, trying to identify some gaps and needs associated with that. We did a needs study based on the input from the consortium members at that time. And then based on the outcome of that needs study, we developed some projects that we were interested in taking a look at to see if that HRSA funding could support to make a real difference in our community to try and help people get treatment and emerge from their substance use disorder.
Now, my understanding is that opioid addiction, some of it is just drug addiction in general for, you know, recreation or whatever, and they get sucked into it. But there's a lot of people that have to take opioids for pain control and then get hooked on the drug from there, correct?
I am not a subject matter expert as far as opioid use disorder. I think that Dr. Andrews and Beth Hinbar are going to be presenting in a couple of segments mm-hmm. from now. I would say that people's journey from use into meeting criteria for substance use disorder are as varied as the individuals. So, yes, as you've discussed, and, you know, I know folks personally that it appears that their journey into substance use disorder began when they received prescribed medication to help with pain, and then that use morphed from there. I'm also aware of people that started using recreationally or socially, and then their use disorder progressed from that point. So I really think that you know, how people get to meeting criteria for use disorder is as varied as the individuals are out there.
And of course, now the main reason we're here is to talk about the funding aspects of this morning. So Patty, kind of explain how the funding is acquired and what the needs are.
Right. So this particular grant, and the grant number, if anyone's interested in looking it up, is G, like George, A133507, and that's with the Department of Health and Human Services. And the grant's name, again, is Rural Communities Opioid Response Implementation Grant. The purpose of it is to really focus in and help folks in our community understand what substance use disease, opioid use disease is. So that's your prevention. How do we prevent that? Well, we need to help people understand how does it become a disease that's that you need assistance with. You know, it's just like with diabetes. You can have a regular lifestyle, everything's going okay, but then all of a sudden the door opens, sort of speak, very basic speaking, and now you need help managing that disease. Substance use disorder is very much the same way. And so we just need to find a way as a community to come together to be more knowledgeable and have a better understanding that, you know, it can happen to anybody. It can happen to your brother, sister, daughter, you know, anybody. So no one's untouched. And so with that, in order for us to get this funding, we had to go through lots of data in regards to checking with the state data, departments of health. The healthcare authority provides data as well. Our county, our local health jurisdiction, they provide data. So to substantiate the need for us to receive this funding, and we had to tell our story about our communities and where we are. And then in addition to that, we had to work with the consortium members and make sure that everybody was on board to provide these activities of prevention, treatment, and recovery. And so with that, we submitted the application, and it was a competitive application, and we won the grant, the funding. We applied for the full $1 million, and we received the full $1 million.
So how long will that keep you in operation? And then how soon do you have to go in for another grant? And then do you compete to
yes.
get the money for the next grant?
Right, that's correct. This current funding will end on August 31st of 2022. So we have that's about 17 months or so left of this particular funding period. And then April 1st, we're actually working on another HRSA grant application. Mm-hmm. And this is a bit more unique in regards to that it's addressing psychostimulants, which includes ADHD medicine, as well as the common street name of methamphetamines. And so it's a very unknown field of substance use because of the fact that there's not a lot of evidence-based data. So the federal government, HRSA, they're looking for applications that will address these issues within their community. And so we are actually working to partner up with members of our current consortium to address this and apply for this grant. And that will be submitted, I believe it's April 1st or May 1st. I can't remember. There's a couple of other grants. So there's multiple grant opportunities out there. This year is what you would call a grant application year, because they go on cycles, mm-hmm. anywhere between 2 to 3 years. And so you really get very busy applying as well as continuing to implement.
Now, the one you were just talking about was a federal grant. Do you also have state grants, or do they kind of team up?
There are different state grants, and some of our consortium members do have funding from state grants and other federal sources. And we do try to track that. And when I say track that, that means that when we come together as a group of consortium members, we want to make sure that we're not overlapping each other's efforts. And we also have to prove that in our applications. So we let them know in our application that there is additional funding already out there for different services. Our activities that we're submitting will not overlap, but they will either build upon or they will be new emerging activities to a pilot project.
So we're working really hard to ensure there's not a duplication of efforts. And that's why it's really important for the consortium to have the membership that it does, to grow our membership so we can be knowledgeable about different agencies and the grants that they may have received in the community, and take a look based on other programming that's happening, making our choice and decisions about projects that we want to move forward with.
So when you're doing these multiple grants, it seems like, you know, you're going from grant to grant to grant. And does that is that something that is difficult to do? Or once you've got a reputation for being able to do what you're setting out to do, does the money come easier?
Well, the money never comes very easy, I can say that, because it takes a lot of effort and commitment. However, it does help us in making a stronger applicant, mm-hmm. if we are successful in implementing well with evidence-based data that comes out of that and activities that provide, you know, is there an impact in the community, a positive impact or even a negative impact. They need to know what happened. So if it's a negative impact, meaning it wasn't successful, then they wouldn't want to put that type of funding and that type of demand of activities out there again. They would then adjust it to meet the needs of where the communities are. So it's a really, it's important for us all to work actively together and collaboratively in not just applying for these grants, but also to implement them.
So how did BHR get involved in this with Summit Pacific? How did this thing grow?
So with the original HRSA grant, I think that was awarded in October of 2018. At the beginning of, I just looked back in my notes in preparation of our interview this morning, feeling like I'm going in for my oral final exam. I looked back at my notes to make sure I was remembering timelines accurately. And the previous person that was in Patty's role just invited myself along with other members of behavioral health, social health, or social services, physical health providers in the community to come together in that original consortium group. And I think, with BHR, we have offices in East County and Alma, as well as Hoquiam, that somehow he became aware of myself and BHR and invited me to the consortium. I've got over 20 years providing community mental health in this area, born and raised here, so I'm really committed to making a difference in this community and have, as so many of us do, professional and personal experience with people in various stages of recovery and recognize the need and saw this as a very important project to become a part of. I think it's wonderful that we have such a diverse consortium group where we really do try our best to collaborate. I know everybody's got kind of a different perspective, but it is so important for us to be communicating with one another. I have yet to meet somebody in the healthcare field, the behavioral healthcare field, or the social service field that says, hey, I don't have enough to do in my life, in my professional life. And so this is a way for us to really kind of join forces, so to speak, based on not only just professional experiences, personal experience, and the evidence that's out there, but really gain for our community, for Grays Harbor, what are those priority projects? What are those priority needs that we see as important to help the members of our community treat and recover from substance use disorder?
Now, when this treatment's done, is there several locations that this is done, or is it one location?
So currently, the funding is available for any individual that qualifies under the HRSA guidance, which is the payer of last resort, meaning there is no other way for them to receive subsidized funding through the state or federal to help them get that treatment or access to that medical service. So once that's proven, there's just a small process to go through that. They will work and can work with a coordinator or their current provider or counselor that they're working with to find a treatment facility anywhere in the state of Washington. And if they can find access to that, meaning there's availability for them to go and receive treatment, whether it's inpatient or intensive outpatient care, then they can actually utilize our transportation service that we have funded, and that transport can be taken and transport them anywhere in the state of Washington for those services.
I'm glad he asked that, because I kept thinking you guys were providing the services as well. But what you're doing is you're organizing, finding people that qualify,
yes,
that have run out of other options, and then you guys step in.
Right. We're trying to make it an equitable opportunity for everybody to have full access to the treatment that they need to manage this disease. And so with that, we needed subsidized payment with that, and that's where the federal fund of this grant will help provide that. And then it's also important to know that it doesn't just stop there. So we meet monthly as a consortium, the group does, and with that, it's opportunity to come to the meeting and say, I have an individual that will be returning to the community after being in inpatient treatment, we'll say. It's not always that. Sometimes they're in outpatient or wherever their circumstance is. And so they'll bring to the meeting and say, you know, we really need some assistance. This person needs to address food security and understand how to cook and eat healthier. Where can we get assistance with that? This person also may need some housing. How can we get assistance with that? So as a group, the consortium, this is where the value of the consortium comes together. They come together and they collaborate and say, right now we as an agency have these resources. We can support this action. So it's really, it's exciting to see, it, just like Angela, I'm born and raised here in Grays Harbor, and it's exciting to see everybody coming together, opening their doors, and really, you know, being collaborative. And it's a partnership. And, you know, it's, you know, you raise your child, it takes a community to raise your child. Well, it takes a community to make the community healthy. So that's what we're doing.
So when it comes to agencies working in this, you're two of how many then?
We currently have 13 agency members, and we're growing. When I say we're growing, we are also having some private citizen interest in wanting to join and be part of the consortium. So it's very exciting times right now. Although it's been challenging with COVID and making it where we can't do in-person meetings, we've been able to, I think it made us stronger. So we found ways to work around that, become more digitally
savvy.
Yeah. And so, you know, my funding actually purchased a few laptops for some of the organizations so their members could have more access, digital access to, you know, communication and such. So it's given us a wealth of skills and ability to really strengthen our partnerships and friendships in the consortium as well, and learn from one another and see where our strengths are so that we can say, hey, this person over here really has this strength. Maybe they can help your particular candidate that you're helping right now. Let's see if we can reach out and do some conversations.
So these candidates, then, they're, how do you find them?
The individuals come to all the subject matter experts to their organizations.
So the consortium itself really functions as like a linkage mechanism. And I think some of the projects that we have spearheaded are the result of in looking for that linkage for people with existing community resources, we found a gap. So, for example, one of the projects that we're working on right now is a transportation project. So we were hearing from multiple members of the consortium that transportation in the form to getting to substance use disorder treatment, primary care physician appointments, anything that involves kind of an individual getting to resources to help them meet their basic needs was lacking. And so we were able to fund a transportation project. But that was after we kind of had some discussions as a consortium of the whole, as a whole, and nobody within their agencies had this great transportation resource that anyone in the community could connect with. And so that, you know, it was that type of process that went into us identifying some of the projects that we're actually funding. Outside of the projects that we're funding, we try and use the expertise amongst the consortium members to help our agencies and the staff of our agencies be knowledgeable about the expertise and services that already exist in our community.
Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.